This audio recording is presented by Jews for Judaism. We are dedicated to keeping Jews Jewish. www.jewsforjudaism.ca.
A couple of brief introductions before we actually get into our introduction tonight. How many of you can read Hebrew?
A little bit.
Okay. You don't have to be able to read Hebrew tonight, but it couldn't hurt. And hopefully, if you have these sheets in front of you, it may be helpful, especially as I refer to the numerical value of certain letters. If you're able to fluently read Hebrew, you may want to just give your sheet to someone that isn't as fluent in Hebrew. I will go slow enough tonight so that if you don't know any Hebrew, you'll be able to follow along. If you know Hebrew very well, you might be a little bit bored. We'll try to meet somehow in the middle. That's number one. Number two, Julius mentioned people growing up saying that they have a hard time learning Hebrew. I didn't personally learn Hebrew till I was in my 20s. I actually attended a rabbinical school, and everyone else knew Hebrew. I didn't. It took me about 4 years to catch on. And then in 1998, I went to India to spend 3 weeks in Dharamsala, which is where the Dalai Lama lives. We went to the run Passover Seders for Jewish travelers. And I met a very interesting woman who is one of the chief translators of the Tibetan Buddhist Sanskrit writings into English. She's a Jewish woman who grew up in Ireland. And she writes about herself. When she was younger, she never really could get into Judaism because she found it too hard to learn Hebrew. Here, ironically, years later, she learned even a more difficult language, Sanskrit, and is now one of the leading translators from Sanskrit into English. So, this is a plug for Hebrew. It's not that hard to learn Hebrew. There are programs in this city that have been run for years where you can literally learn how to read Hebrew, not understand every word, but learn how to read the language in one or two easy lessons. There are only 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. There are just a couple of vowels. It's very, very phonetically aligned. Letters are easy to understand. There aren't these crazy English diphthongs and words like thorough. So Hebrew is pretty much straight at you. If you spend a couple of minutes a night studying three or four letters in the course of a week, you could easily learn the Hebrew alphabet and how to read Hebrew. It's a guarantee. If you can't find a program in Toronto, please get in touch with me. I'm happy to either do it with you or hook you up with a program. Hebrew is quite amazing, as we'll see tonight. The topic of the program, the title, I think we titled this The Mystical Meaning of the Hebrew Alphabet. I was always praying that no one was going to ask me what the word mystical means, because it's a very hard word to translate. I've been to symposium where they'll spend hours trying to translate or explain the meaning of the word spiritual. We're not going to do that tonight. Either you know what the word means or you don't. In Hebrew, we call the Hebrew language Lashon HaKodesh. We call it the Holy Tongue. What does the word holy mean? It's another one of those words that you can spend a long time trying to figure out. Holiness, though, basically means, on its simplest level, separate. Separate, different. Often, it's separate and different because it's higher, it's elevated. So, we're talking tonight about a language that's holy. At least, I'll be able to show you, trying to set the parameters tonight, that Hebrew is different. It's probably different than any other spoken or written language in the world. And let's begin with that. You know, the rabbis teach us that when we were in exile in Egypt 3,300 years ago, there were several reasons that we merited being redeemed from Egypt. There were several reasons why God found favor with the Jewish people. One of them is that we did not change our language. There's something very special about having our own language. Even when Jews didn't have Hebrew as their primary language, they came up with a Spanish form of Hebrew. We came up with Yiddish. Often these other languages we don't call Lashon Kodesh, the holy language, but sometimes Yiddish might be called Lashon Kedoshim, the language of the holy ones. But tonight we want to look at Hebrew. What's interesting is that if you look at every other language in the world, you'll find that English, French, German, Swedish, Hawaiian, whatever language you pick, the letters of the alphabet and the words of that language are conventional, arbitrary. What does the letter R mean? What does the letter U mean? These letters don't mean anything. They're symbols. But they're very arbitrary. Especially the words that we use. Oh, I shouldn't touch this. I was told three times. Okay. So here we have a chair. We call this a chair. The truth is that in English, there was no reason we had to call that a chair. If we called that a table, and we called that table over there a chair, we'd all be able to somehow get along. It wouldn't really change anything. There's nothing in the chair that demands that you call it a chair. The word chair is somewhat conventional and arbitrary. The same with every language in the world, except I'm going to show you two examples now that are not arbitrary or conventional. Here's one language that many of you probably learned sometime in high school. So here's a language that we call the chemical language, or whatever you call this. I'm not a chemist, although I was on the chemistry team in my high school way back when. So here, the language we're using is not arbitrary or conventional. The letters are. But actually, H2O tells you something intrinsically about what it describes. This is not just water because we assign it arbitrarily to mean water, but water is, on a molecular level, atomic level, composed of two hydrogen atoms and one oxygen atom. Bless you. So, this is an example of a language where the actual symbols mean something in reality. They have intrinsic meaning. I'll share one other language with you. Anyone tell me what that means? Any chess players know that means the king's pawn goes to king 4, pawn to king 4. There are other chess languages, but I'm giving you two examples of language where the symbols are not simply arbitrary. They actually correspond on some real level to the reality they describe. But we need to understand that English, French, German, Spanish, almost any language in use in the world today, the letters are more or less conventional and arbitrary. The words are conventional and arbitrary. One of the reasons that we are able to say that Hebrew is holy, it's different, is because each letter of the Hebrew alphabet, all 22 letters, have incredibly profound meaning. We're going to see that those meanings are not arbitrary. They're actually rooted in the letters themselves. And we're going to see that because each of the Hebrew letters has very precise, profound meaning, every Hebrew word is also not a word that's just arbitrary or conventional. The word is there because that has to be the word, as we'll soon see. I'm going to tell you something that's a very bold claim. A very bold claim. But Hebrew makes it about itself. We say the following, and listen very carefully. We say that if you know the meaning of all 22 letters, if you really know the meaning of what each letter is, and that's not an easy level to reach. Tonight we're going to scratch at the surface. But if you really know what each letter means, and you really know what reality is, that might even be harder. You understand what a dog really is. If you understand what the sun really is. If you understand what a friend really is. So if you understand the letters and you understand reality, here's the claim. You can write the Hebrew dictionary. You would be able to, on your own, write the Hebrew dictionary. We're told, interestingly enough, that in the Garden of Eden, God brought all the animals before Adam. And Adam named each of the animals. And the Bible said that whatever Adam named that animal, that's what it was. Not simply that was the name he happened to call it. The name that Adam assigned each animal was able to capture the essence of what that animal was. Adam somehow was a Hebrew genius. Adam somehow, on a spiritual level, was intensely aware of what reality was. The Jewish mystical writings say that Adam was able to see from one end of the universe to the next. It's not describing his vision 2020. It's telling you how clear he was able to see things. And because of that, Adam was able to name the animals, and those were the names. I'm going to begin tonight by just sharing a couple of examples, very short examples, to show you how the Hebrew language has a correspondence with reality. Simple examples, nothing too complex. Let's go back to this one over here. This is not so significant, this example, but it's a cute example. The Hebrew word for water is mayim. If you look at the structure of the Hebrew word for water, it also has this two and one structure. There are Jewish scholars that are able to explain why specifically the mems correspond with the hydrogen, the yud corresponds to the oxygen. We'll leave that for another evening. Just on the simplest level, see that the Hebrew word for water reflects its atomic structure of something being in two and something being in one. Let's go to some more serious examples. By the way, can everyone see the boards? Okay, if you're not able to see, you're going to have a lot of faith. Okay. Here's a Hebrew word called ozein. Ozein is your ear. Now I'm going to show you another Hebrew word. Here's the Hebrew word moznayim, which means scales, a balance, a scale. The Hebrew word for ear, the Hebrew word for scale. Do you see? And here you have the same three letters. The Hebrew word for scale is somehow based upon the word for ear. Can anyone tell me why that's the case? Well, it's true you have two ears and somehow they balance off your head, but there's a more profound reason. Yes, your ear is the organ that gives you balance. Now, somehow, I don't know, by the way, if the ancient people knew that hearing, the ears, were the source of the balance system of our body. But somehow the Hebrew language, thousands of years old, knew the connection between balance and our ears. There's a connection between balance and our ears. The Talmud gives another interesting example. Here's the word herayon. Herayon is the Hebrew word for pregnancy. Herayon means pregnancy. Now, if you know Hebrew letters, you can do this with me. If you need to consult the chart, let's look at what happens when we look at the numerical equivalents. He is the fifth letter of the alphabet. Resh is the letter representing 200. Yud is the letter 10. The Vav is 6. The nun again is 50. Can we add that up, anyone? 270.
71.
200. By the way, this is like 4 hours ago. I put on these brand new glasses that have trifocals. I'm swimming in this room with you. It's very hard for me to see. 250, 60, 271. Pregnancy and the number 271. Is there a connection between pregnancy and 271?
9 months.
Well, at 9 months, 30 days in a month, we're hitting about 271. And therefore, the Hebrew word for pregnancy is not just an accident, but that somehow the word itself is connected with this period of time it takes to conceive a child. Let's look at another interesting example. Here's a word that's not so well known. Here's the Hebrew word bohen, which means thumb. Hebrew word for thumb. Second letter of the alphabet, fifth letter of the alphabet, and the letter for 50, the final letter. In Hebrew, several letters have a form that they assume when they're at the end of a word. Ordinarily, this would look like this. Bohen. What is significant about the thumb? When I was growing up, in biology class we learned that one of the major differences between human beings and every other creature that has two legs is what they call our opposable thumb. It's one of the unique, I always thought it was our brain, soul, we can think. But the thumb somehow is unique to human beings. When we look at the Hebrew alphabet, anyone remember the movie 2001 A Space Odyssey? Boy, no one else remembers it? Stanley Kubrick, beautiful classical music. And the computer's name was HAL. And everyone knows why it was called HAL? Because the letters after H-A-L are I-B-M, right? HAL the computer, because HAL are the letters that come right before I-B-M. The word bohen, thumb, are the letters that come right after, before the bet comes aleph, before the hey comes a dalet. Before the nun comes a mem, Adam, man. What's significant about the thumb is its intrinsic connection to human beings, to the man. Okay. What is the Hebrew word for clothing? Beged is one of the words.
Levush.
And levush is another one of the words for clothing. We all know how clothing came about. In the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve were told not to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. They disobey. They eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And they immediately notice that they're naked. And we're told that they were terribly embarrassed. They were ashamed. They grabbed some leaves. God later makes them garments of skin. But somehow clothing is very much connected to this experience way back in the Garden of Eden. Beged, clothing, is also the Hebrew word for rebellion. Bogade is a rebellion, a rebel. That somehow the clothing we wear is related to this act of rebellion. The other word for clothing, levush, very closely resembling the word busha for embarrassment, ashamed. So the clothing we wear is, again, tied into, the words for the clothing we wear are very much tied into that primordial experience where we had to start wearing clothing. We rebelled, we became ashamed. Let's give just one or two more examples. Yad is the Hebrew word for hand. Why is Yad the Hebrew word for hand? Well, let's play around a little bit. Dalet is the Hebrew word letter for four. Got four of these guys. And then you have one somehow different finger. All right. What the rabbis tell us is that Yud, the letter 10, Dalet, the letter for 4, 14, is significant because we have 14 joints in our hand. Count them. You've got three joints in all of the fingers. 4 times 3 is 12. Two joints in the thumb. That gives you 14. Yad had to be Yad because we have 14 joints in our hand. There's a very beautiful Hebrew word called Yadid. The word Yadid in Hebrew means a friend, a companion. Do you know why a friend is called a Yadid? Because they go yad bi yad. They go hand in hand. People that are beloved embrace each other. They hold hands. And therefore a friend is called a Yadid, yad and yad. But very interestingly, what is the Hebrew word for strength? Koach. Koach, the Hebrew word for strength. Do you know why Hebrew strength in Hebrew? Because Chaf is the letter 20 and Chet is the letter for 8, 28. Which means you're using all of your strength, both your hands. One hand is 14, two hands is 28. So strength is the use of both your hands, all of your strength. When Adam named the animals in the Garden of Eden, he called the dog, for example, Kelev. Dog is a Kelev. Kelev. Because Kelev is like the word kol lev, with all of its heart. The Hebrew word for dog, kelev, is tied to the word kol lev, with all of its heart, because a dog is very loyal. Very loyal. It'll connect with you with all of its heart. The Hebrew word for camel is gamal. My little brother went to Hebrew school. He was telling me all the animals he learned. Told him about the kelev and the chatul, the cat, and the gamal, the camel. And then he asked me, do you know how you say penguin in Hebrew? And I said, no. And he said, penguin. So, but I'm going to take a 3-second detour for just a moment here. Gamal is the word for camel. So those two words sound similar. Yeah. Camel, gamal. Camel, gamal. There is a theory that we're not going to study tonight. I just want to point it out to you. A famous theory that Hebrew is the source of all other languages in the world. Someone wrote a very important book. It's on your bibliography, called The Word by Isaac Moseson. He shows how tremendous numbers of words in many languages are very, very related to the Hebrew. So it may not be an accident that our word camel connects with the Hebrew word gamal. But why is a camel called a gamal? Because the word gomel in Hebrew means to nourish, to sustain. And what is the camel? It's the animal that when people traveled, it was able to sustain them. It was able to store water for them. So the camel even looks a little bit like the first letter. We'll have a chance to mention maybe a few more examples of English and Hebrew similarities as we go through the evening. Now let's go a step deeper. This is just a cute introduction. Everyone breathe. Okay. The Jewish mystics teach us that Hebrew was the way in which God created the world. That God created the world by using the letters of the Hebrew alphabet. We talk about atomic theory, where we have different atoms that compose everything. Well, we believe that the world, this is an old thing I remember hearing from Woody Allen. He said that there was a big debate that in history, the Greek philosopher Democritus thought that the world was composed of tiny particles called atoms. And he said Leibniz thought the world was composed of tiny particles called monads. So Woody Allen said, thank God the two never met, otherwise it would have been a very dull argument. But what we say is that the world is composed of 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet. And the letters in the Hebrew alphabet correspond to the will of the Creator. When we see a letter in the Hebrew alphabet, it's telling us something about what God's intention is. It expresses God's will and God's intention. Therefore, how did God create light? Go back to Genesis. And God said, let there be light. God said, let there be light. Vayehi or, and there was light. Now we shouldn't understand this, that God has somehow vocal cords and spoke like a great orator, let there be light. But when it speaks about God speaking, what it's saying ultimately is that God projected these words, the word light, or. What it means is that God willed these letters to produce their effects. So God creates the world with the Hebrew letters. We say in our prayers every morning, Baruch Sha'amar V'haya Ha'olam. Blessed is He who spoke, and the world came into existence. You ever think of the word abracadabra and realize what it means? It's from the Hebrew abera kedabera. The magician would say abracadabra when they were about to materialize something. Poof! A rabbit's going to come out of this hat. But it's basically the magician says something, these magic words, and then something is produced. Well, that's how the world was created. Abira, I will create. Bore, create. I will create. Kedabira, as I speak. The creation is a result of the speech. The speech was in Hebrew. The Hebrew letters are called Ot for letter, Otiot for letters. So Ot is a letter. Resh is an Ot. Vav is an Ot. Aleph is an Ot. But in Hebrew, the word Ot also means a symbol or a sign. So these are not just letters like R or Z or P, but these are all signs, symbols. They represent something much greater than themselves. There's another letter, there's another word in Hebrew for letter. Another word for letter. And that's the word teva. The word teva is the word for letter in Hebrew. But if you look carefully at it, if you have some Hebrew background, you'll see that in the word teva is the word bayit, house. So somehow this word letter is connected to the idea of construction, of building, of making something. Because the house of this universe was built from letters. If you look at your sheets, I'm going to write it up on the board anyway, but if you look on the sheet under the big letter Aleph, you have the first verse in the Bible. It's the Genesis 1 quotation. It's not very elegant, but that's what we have to do tonight. Okay, quickly. Bereshit. In the beginning. Bara. Created. Elohim. God. Et HaShamayim. The heavens. The Et HaAretz. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. There's a very peculiar word in Hebrew that has no translation into the English language. It's this word, et. It's basically a grammatical form in Hebrew that precedes a direct object of a sentence. Really, it just could have said, Bereshit bara Elohim, in the beginning God created, HaShemayim v'haaretz, the heavens and the earth. But we have this strange, peculiar word, et. The Jewish mystics tell us that the way you should really read this sentence is as follows. Bereshit bara Elohim, in the beginning God created, et. And et is the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet and the last letter of the Hebrew alphabet. The first thing that God created was the spectrum from Aleph to Tav. Aleph to Tav, the whole Hebrew alphabet. That was the first thing created. By the way, you'll notice that it looks like our word that we learned before, Ot. The Hebrew word for letter is composed of the first and the last letter of the alphabet. So God creates the world with the alphabet. By the way, you ever notice that alphabet sounds like what? Aleph Bet. Our Aleph Bet, just a coincidence, sounds like the English alphabet. Another example. We say that God created the world with words. God spoke the word light. There's light. God spoke the word for the heavens. There are the heavens. What's amazing, if we look at the Hebrew word for word, it's davar. Davar is word. But davar is also the Hebrew word for thing. What do we see from this? That the word is the thing. It's the same word, davar. The thing is its word. The word is what brings about the thing. There's an equation between the word of God and the reality that comes into existence. One of the first Kabbalistic works ever written, supposedly, was the Sefer Yetzirah, the book of creation, the book of formation. A very profoundly difficult book. I think I do have it on your bibliography. It's a little bit of a spooky book. Because every single person in recent history that was involved with trying to translate it died very prematurely. It's a bit of a scary book. Supposedly, it goes back to Abraham. But in this book, Sefer Yetzirah, we're told pretty much how the world came into existence through these words. We're told that in the Talmud, there were great rabbis who were able to create actual living creatures, a calf, through the use of the Hebrew alphabet. We're told that the Maharal from Prague, this has not been verified historically, but if you travel someday to Prague and you ask the non-Jews there about the great Rabbi Loewy from the 16th century, they all know the story that he built a golem. He took earth, he formed it into some kind of a creature, and then he put Hebrew letters on a piece of paper into the mouth of this creature and it came to life. Again, I'm not expecting you to accept this story as true. This is what we call in the realm of modern spiritual mythology. Some people believe it is truth, some people question it. But the Talmud for sure tells us that great sages were able to create life using the letters of the Hebrew alphabet. Okay. Take a deep breath. I'm going to change the... Okay. We have two letters here now. One is the Hebrew letter pe, the letter for 80. One is the Hebrew letter resh, the letter for 200. I also have them as they might appear in a Torah scroll. I work with Julius, who is a very, very famous graphic artist, designer. And I think I may have lost this. Okay. I brought a special show and tell thing tonight, and I think it's gone. Oh, no, it's here. Okay. Julius once pointed out to me that in the FedEx logo, there's an embedded image. Does everyone see the arrow between the E and the X? So there's a little white arrow between the E and the X. And a lot of people never noticed it. But there is a little white arrow between the E and the X. It's what you call an embedded image. I guarantee you it didn't appear there by accident. The Chacham, who was the graphic designer, obviously made sure that it would appear in their logo. It gives the impression, you don't see it? I have a good eye doctor that I'm seeing tomorrow. Look at the white space between the E and the X, the white space.
Oh, the negative space.
Negative space. Can anyone not see that arrow? The Hochland service. Okay. So, that's what we call an embedded or hidden image. We have the same thing in some of our Hebrew letters. If you look at the letter pe, you'll notice that in relief, the white space is the Hebrew letter for bet, the letter 2, the second letter. Why that appears, don't ask me. Someone smarter than me probably knows. We want to look at these two letters, pe and resh. Pe and resh. We're going to study these two letters a little bit closely now. Because what I want to begin doing at this point is moving you into the part of the evening where we learn the meanings of the letters. This is just what we call the appetizer. This is like little green parsley that you put around the chopped liver. The letter pe is very much like the Hebrew word peh, mouth. And that's what the peh is. The peh is a mouth. If you look at the peh, there's actually a little opening here, like a mouth. So the letter peh is the idea of opening, The idea of a mouth, the mouth is the opening to our body, to our face. There's two very fascinating Hebrew words. The Hebrew word panim means face. The panim is our face. There's the Hebrew word pinim, which means inside. The panim is called the panim because it's the opening to our inside. If you want to know what's going on inside of someone, you don't look at their elbow or their navel or their hair. You look at their face. The face is what reflects what's going on inside the person. So the peh, the tape, the mouth, the opening, the entrance is in the panim, the face. It takes you to the panim, the inside. The panim is what connects the outside of a person to the inside of a person. Again, the important point here is the letter K, which means mouth, opening, and you can actually see a little opening there, a little mouth. Resh is connected to the Hebrew word rosh, which means head. So here we have face, opening, getting inside of something. Here we have the idea of the head. Rosh Hashanah. What does it mean, Rosh Hashanah? The head of the year?
No, beginning of the year.
So it could be the beginning of the year, but what it really talks about is this is the source of the entire year. This is what the whole year is based upon. This becomes the head of a country, is that person around whom the whole country revolves. So the head is the source of something. The head symbolizes the internal essence of what something is. It's based up here. The head of something, the rosh, the head of the year, is also the unity of the year. It expresses the whole essence of the year in this one day. So we have two, and it's sort of vague at this point, I understand. We had a lot of time. We can go into these letters very deeply. I just need to take you this far at this point. That pay deals with entrance, opening. Resh, head, deals with the source of something. It's internal unity. When we take these two letters together, pay and resh, we get the idea of entering into, breaking into an internal unity. Breaking into the source of something. Breaking into the place where something is essentially established as a base, as a head. We have something centered over here, and when we peh, when we enter into it, we break into it, we open it up, we're opening up that unity. So the idea of peh resh deals with the idea of somehow opening up, breaking into an internal unity. Watch what happens so beautifully with the Hebrew letters. This is special stuff that has tape on it. Baruch Hashem. Can everyone see in the cheap seats the bottom letters? Okay. If you need to stand up, please do so. We have seven in each row. What we're going to do is just look at how this root of pei resh appears in, I think, 14 different words in the Hebrew language. You see that what changes is the last letter, because the last letter we go through different other letters in the alphabet. Watch what happens with this basic root meaning of breaking into a headquarters, opening up a unity. Pei Resh Aleph is the Hebrew word for wild. I remember in Hebrew school, my teacher would say to me, "You're a peradam, you're a wild beast." But what does it mean that someone's wild? It means they're not together. They're not put together, they're all over the place. So this person is not together. They're all over the place. They're spreading out all over the place. Their unity has been broken open. Para. Hey, resh dalid is the Hebrew root meaning to separate. When you want to separate threads, when you want to separate things, leaf road, to separate, you have a unity, it's going to become separated. Hey, resh hey is the Hebrew word for to multiply, to be fruitful, peru or vu. So you have something that again pops out. It's now going to be all over the place. Not just one source, one head, one unity. It's now breaking open. Para. Pei Reish Zayin. So in the scroll of Esther, the unwalled cities were called Arei HaPrazot. And they were unwalled and therefore not contained. When you have a walled city, it's contained by this wall. It's a unity that isn't being broken into. But an unwalled city, there are no boundaries. It can spread and spread and spread. Pei Reish Zayin. Pei Reish Chet is the word for to blossom. Again, you have the flower, you have the thing itself, and then, boom, it explodes, it blossoms into many parts. You have Pei Reish Tet. Here, by the way, is another example of that Hebrew-English continuum. The word prat in Hebrew, prat, very similar to the English word part. We have a prat in Hebrew, a detail, a part of something, the English word part. And what is a prat, a part? It's a detail of the big picture. You have the unity, you have the source, you have the headquarters, and now you're breaking into it and going to a little piece of that bigger unity. Prat. You're breaking it down into a little part. Then you have Pei Reish Chaf. Lifroch means to break something into pieces. You have something, boom, you smash it into pieces. Pei Reish Mem. Anyone knows what that means? Which means?
To
unravel. Right? Someone has their hair braided, and you unbraid it, you unravel it. Lifrom. There was a source, a unity, a whole, and now it's going to come apart. Peresh Samech. We know that in Hebrew, a piece of bread, pieces are called prusot. So lifros, paras, means again to cut something into pieces. You have a whole piece, and the prusot are the little pieces that you cut into small pieces. Peresh Ayin is specifically the root to mean to unbraid hair that's braided. A special term specifically to unbraid a braid. Peresh Ayin. Peresh Tzadi. Lifrots, which means what? To smash something with force. There it's not a gentle action. It's a very strong, forceful action. Lifrots. To smash something apart. Peresh Kuf. Interesting word. Lifrok means to break apart. But the Hebrew word perek means a chapter. It's a part of a big thing. You have a big book, and here's just a chapter, a piece. You've broken into the big picture, now you have a little piece of it, a perek. Also, by the way, perek can mean a joint. You have the whole hand, you have the joint, part of the hand. Here's a very interesting example now. Peresh Resh. In Hebrew, what are pirurim?
Crumbs.
Now watch what happens. Prusot are pieces. Because you have a piece of bread, now you have small pieces of it. But pirurim are not pieces of bread, it's little tiny crumbs. Because here what you've done is you've doubled up this last letter, so you've intensified the action. So here, you're really breaking it apart, you're taking it to make tiny crumbs. Not bigger pieces. Peresh-shin. Again, has double meaning. Lifrosh means to separate.
But a parasha is a chapter. Also, lifrosh can mean to explain. So you have some bigger concept, you're going to now explain it piece by piece. Again, this is a very, very short introduction. Short and a little bit vague. But I want to give you just a sense, a taste of the fact that the Hebrew letters form families of meaning.
What about Pered the Taman?
Pered is a donkey, a mule.
Yeah,
mule.
You write it the same way.
Yeah.
And Taman is a
Taman. Taman, yeah. Mm-hmm. We can go on forever. But I wanted you to appreciate, again, the root Peresh and how it's consistently developed throughout the Hebrew alphabet with each of the suffix letters. Now, I'm going to take questions later because we have 120 people here. We got questions to finish. So hold your questions until 9:30. Alex, you're going to let me know when 9:30 comes along?
What about the last one?
The last one, that's for your imagination. I didn't call the last one. Okay. If you could all turn to your big letter Aleph that you see on your board, on your sheets. Yesterday was Tisha B'Av, and I remember that someone approached me at the synagogue I was at and wanted to know why Jews for Judaism is giving a class like this. And I told them three or four reasons, but I didn't tell him another reason. Years ago, I was attending a Christian missionary conference in Pennsylvania. And I spent several hours with one of the people there, showing him a lot of the stuff we're doing tonight and a lot more. We had hours together. But at the end of our discussion, he walked away realizing something very amazing. He said, Hebrew is quite holy. Hebrew is quite incredible. And he became so convinced that Hebrew was the holy language, he realized, why in the world then, if God was going to give us more Torah, more Bible, he'd stick it in Greek. It created a profound impression on this person. That was a little plug. Okay. Let's go into our first letter. Aleph. You should all have a big Aleph right in front of you on your sheets. Okay. I'm definitely not of sofer material. Okay. More or less, that's your Aleph. Here's another form of it. What we're going to do is try to understand what the Aleph is. What is this letter Aleph? And what I'm going to share with you is the technology that we use to figure out what the letters are. There's actually a method to this madness. And if we had enough time, we can go through each of the letters in the Hebrew alphabet and show that this just carries on through each and every letter. There are sometimes 7 or 8 different ways that we can use to access the meaning of a letter. We will access the name of the letter. The name will be significant. We will access the sound of the letter. Sometimes the sound will be helpful. We will access the numerical value, the numerical equivalent of the letter. We will access the shape of the letter. We will access something called the code of first words. There's a very, very famous Kabbalistic teaching that if you want to understand anything in Judaism, go to the first place it appears in the Bible. If you want to know what a kiss really is, go to the first kiss in the Bible. It's a very, very important tool. So if you want to understand the meaning of a letter, we're going to go to the first time that letter appears in the Bible. You'll see how that works. Then, there are all kinds of numerical abbreviation techniques that we will use. There are these basic ways of approaching a letter.
Let's start with the letter Aleph, and let's look at its name. What is the meaning of the word Aleph? Yes? Excuse me? Some scholars think that the Aleph somehow connected to the idea of an ox, but it's not the meaning of the word Aleph. Aleph in Hebrew means two things. An aluf is a commander, a general in the Israeli army. An aluf is a commander, a very high officer. So one meaning of Aleph is the idea of leader, commander, general, a big shot, a macher. Another meaning of the word Aleph, la'aleif, means to teach, to study. Why do you think in Hebrew we go to Israel and we study in an ulpan? Ulpan from the letter Aleph, la'aleif, to tame. So we have these two meanings of the word Aleph. Teaching, wisdom, knowledge, leader, general, commander. Keep those in your hard drive. Then we have the sound of the letter Aleph. What is the sound of the letter Aleph? It's silent. The letter Aleph doesn't have any sound. Bet makes a boo. Gimel makes a goo. Aleph is just nothing. Silence. Think about that for a minute. Silence. The number of Aleph is the number one. Aleph is somehow connected to the idea of numero uno, one. So we have silence, we have wisdom, teacher, commander, we have one. Let's go to the shape. When you study the Hebrew letters, you'll see that most letters are composed of other letters. The Aleph is composed of two different letters. The middle of the Aleph is a Vav, and the top and the bottom of the Vav are the letter Yud. So the Aleph is formed from a Yud, and a Vav. A lot of very interesting allusions in this construction. For example, just to think about it. You all know the famous story of the man down here is Jacob. And he's dreaming. And he's dreaming, and there's a ladder going all the way up to heaven. This idea of this connection between heaven and earth is a very, very common idea in all spiritual traditions. That's what we're trying to do ultimately. We're trying to connect ourselves down here to something very, very much in the spiritual realm. So we have also this idea in the letter Aleph of this ladder. Down here is a Yud. It could stand for, let's say, Yisrael, Israel, us. And then up here, we have the Yud, the first letter of God's name. And somehow this is a picture of what all of our life is about. Trying to connect this earthly, terrestrial Jewish nation to its Father in heaven. But much, much more profound is the numerical value of these letters. Yud is the letter for 10. Vav is a letter for 6. So we have here Yud, Yud, Vav, 10, 10, 6, which is 26. 26 is highly significant because it is the numerical value of God's essential name in the Bible. The basic name of God in the Bible is a name that we as Jews don't pronounce. It's a word that combines the ideas of Hayah, Hoveh, and Yihyeh. He was, He is, He will be. Which means the Eternal One. God is present, ever present, in the past, in the present, in the future, all at one time.
We don't do that. As human beings, we exist now, and in the future, that hasn't come yet. The past is gone. For God, it's all at the same time. So God is the eternal one. God is beyond time. God is not living in the present. God is outside of time. In the Bible, we call God this name Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, which we don't pronounce. But the letters Yud, 10, Hey, 5, Vav, 6, Hey, 5, adds up to
26.
So the Aleph, if you look at its shape, is 10, 10, and 6, 26, very significant. Now we go to the code of first words. What is the first time the letter Aleph appears at the beginning of a word in the Bible? So we had our first verse in the Bible on the back of your sheets here, which reads, Bereshit, Bereshit, Ba-ra, Elohim. The third word in the Bible is the word Elohim, one of the names of God, and it begins with an Aleph. So if you want to know the meaning of the letter Aleph, find the first time that letter appears at the beginning of a word in the Bible. So Aleph is connected to the word Elohim, the name of God. Let's review for a second. We have a letter whose name means teacher, wisdom, commander, leader. It's a silent letter. It's silent. You know the Hebrew word for world? We're living on something called a olam. The world we're in is called olam. And it's called olam because olam is related to the Hebrew word he'olam, hidden. Why does the word for world connect to the word for hidden? Because the creator of the world is hidden in the world. God is not manifest. You can't see God. There's a certain hiddenness to God himself. So when we think about the Aleph being a silent letter, it's a clue. So again, the name, Aleph, commander, wisdom, leader, teacher. The sound, silent. The number, one. We say that God is one. What does that mean, God is one? You can study this concept for many, many years. We sometimes think what the Torah is telling us is, Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. Hear, O Israel, God is one. And we think that what it's telling us is there's one God, not 10 gods, not 3 gods, not 40 gods. But that's not all the Torah is teaching you. It's not simply telling you there's only one God. Because if that's all it was telling you, we wouldn't have to say it twice a day for our whole life. It's a kind of simple idea. You can learn it when you're 7 years old once, and that's it. You'll never forget it. How many gods are there, Johnny? Oh, there's one God. How do I know? Because I heard there's one God. We have to teach it to ourselves twice a day for our whole life. You know why? Because it's telling us something more than the fact that there's one God. It's telling us that all there is God. God is all there is. The Torah says, Ein od milvado. There's nothing else that really exists. Everything you see in the world is an expression of God. You know what? That's a very, very hard idea to assimilate. When you see your baby being born, you can accept that. When you see a beautiful sunset, or you see a gorgeous sea, you can accept the idea that's God there. You go to the Grand Canyon, the Canyon's Rockies, there's God. There's a lot of stuff in the world, it's very hard to see God. When horrible things happen, it's difficult to see God. And yet God tells us in the Bible, I create light and I form darkness. I make peace and I create evil. God makes everything that exists. There's nothing in the world that is here because it comes from something else other than God. And you know what? That's a very hard concept to wrap your head around. That can take a lifetime to really finally understand. That's why we're told that after decades of not seeing his son. When Jacob is finally reunited with his son Joseph, after more than 20 years, we're told that Joseph cried on his shoulder, but Jacob was saying the Shema. Jacob was saying, "Hear, O Israel, God is one." Because now he's finally able to somehow connect with the fact that, you know what, everything in this world is from God. He had a tough time for many years when his beloved son was gone. So we have the idea that God is one. We have the shape that it points to the name Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, 26. We have the code of first words, that the Aleph begins this word of Elohim. We have something amazing. Look at these sheets again. If you have it, with the big Aleph, look at the sentence, Bereshit bara Elohim et ha-shamayim ve ha-aretz. If you can follow along, try to. If you can't, just open your hearts and listen. There are actually many different names of God in the Bible. Many names of God. There's a name of God that our Rastafarian friends call all the time. They call him J-A-H. In Hebrew we call it Yud-He. Just the first two letters of God's name. Yud-He. That's one of God's names. Yud is 10, He is 5, 15. There's another name of God we saw was Yud-He Vav-He, the 26th name. Another name of God is the first two letters of Elohim, Aleph Lamed, 31. The name Elohim itself is 86. Watch something incredible. If you start from the Bet in Bereshit, the first letter in the entire Bible, start with the letter Bet and count 15 letters, you're going to get the letter Aleph. Again, 15 is Yud. Hey, one of the letters of God, one of the names of God. Starting from the first letter, counting 15 letters, you get Aleph. What does Aleph stand for? You don't get it by now, you're in big trouble. Right? Aleph is a letter that represents wisdom, and general, and commander, and teacher, and silence, and one. And this number 26. And now we see that if you count 15 letters. Again, 15 is one of the names of God. From the first letter in the Bible, we get the letter Aleph. If you count 26 letters from the first letter in the Bible, you hit the letter Aleph. Nachamol again. If you count 31 letters from the first letter in the Bible, again, all these numbers are numbers that correspond to names of God. 31 letters, you hit an Aleph. If you count 86 letters from the first letter in the Bible, you get another Aleph. If you look at almost all the abbreviations for God's name, almost all the abbreviations, they begin with the letter Aleph. Adon, we call God Adon. We call God Eyeh Asher Eyeh, I will be what I will be. We call God Adonai. We call God Adir, the Mighty One. Echad, the One. All of the nicknames of God begin with the letter Aleph. Do you have a sense as to what the letter Aleph means? If it smells like a duck, and it quacks like a duck, and it walks like a duck, it's an Aleph. Okay. I mentioned before that this idea of God's unity is very difficult. The idea that everything you witness in the world is really from God. So the letter Aleph is this idea of one, oneness. You take the letter Aleph and you spell it backwards, Pei Lamed Aleph, it spells Peleth, which is a wonderment, a mystery. Because the oneness of God, the unity of God, is an incredible mystery. Unfortunately, we're going to have to end in about 3 minutes. I want to share one more piece, and I really feel frustrated because there's really so much more to do.
Another time.
I recommend that either stay tuned for part two someday or make access of the recommended books. Very quickly, please follow carefully. What time is it, please? Good. We've got to get out soon because the alarm's going to go off. They're going to kill us. All right. Again, give me all your marbles for a few minutes. The Talmud says that there are three partners in the creation of every person. Three partners. There's your mommy and your daddy and the KBH, the Kodesh Baruch Hu, God. Your mother, your father, and God. Those are the three partners. The human being is called Adam. I'm going to write it without the fancy final letter. Adam is the name of what we are, humans. And you'll see, interestingly, that it's divided into two parts. It has this part, Dam, which means blood. That's the physical part of who we are. And then it has this Aleph, which represents the spiritual part of who we are. Again, the human being, we're told in the Bible, was created out of the dust of the earth. But then God breathed the breath of life, gave him a godly soul. So every human being has these two components, a very physical, earthly component, and a spiritual, godly component. Watch what happens. We're told that the two terrestrial partners in our creation are our father and our mother. Av and Ein. Av in Hebrew is Aleph Bet, which is one and two. And Ein is 1 and 40. So Ein equals 41. Av equals 3 for a total of 44. And Dam in Hebrew, blood, is 4 and 40. So the physical part of who we are, our physical part, corresponds to our mother and our father. The Dam 44 is equal to Av and Aim 44. The rabbis teach us that our name, Adam, has two different meanings. One, many of you said, is from Adama. The human being, the man, comes from the earth, Adama. But another reason why we're called Adam is because the word Adama means Adameh. I can resemble. I can be like. I have the ability to be like God. Watch what happens. Watch what happens. We take the name of God, follow carefully, and we're going to spell it out in its entirety. The name of God we saw was Yud, Hey, Vav, Hey. I'm just spelling out the name of God. Yud, Hey, Vav, Hey. And we're going to add it up now. God's name is 10 and 6 and 4 and then 5 and 1 and then 6 and 1 and 6 and then 5 and 1. Anyone have a calculator? 45. That the name of God, if you spell it out in its fullness, is 45. Adam, the human being, if you spell out the letters in our name, it's 44 plus the 1, 45. The human being, Adam, has the ability to be just like our Creator, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. What's amazing, if you appreciate the meaning of the letter Aleph, it takes you throughout the Bible in so many different ways. For example, I had a verse up here before that I tore up. If you can see this verse, it speaks about not eating things that will contaminate our soul. And the Torah says, "V'lo titam ubahem," don't become contaminated with them. Don't become impure by them. Venit matem. And you will become impure. If you impurify yourselves by doing certain things, You'll become impure. And this word, to become impure, is spelled tet mem aleph. It has an aleph in its root. But when it speaks about you becoming impure, it's missing the aleph. The aleph somehow in the Bible drops out. Why? Because when you do certain things, we're told you lose your connection to the one, the source. So when you're going through the Bible, the letter aleph, again, is a silent letter. You can read the word without it. But the fact that it's missing in certain words is there for a point. It's telling us when God can be missing as well. Time? What time is it?
A quarter of?
Okay, I'm going to steal 5 more minutes. But I'm going to have to ask you, please listen carefully. After these 5 minutes, I'm going to ask you to just very quietly, in orderly fashion, begin moving towards the elevators. On the way out, please grab, if you can, one of the final sheets. If you don't get it, just call our office, we'll get it to you. I want to thank you in advance for being here. I'm sorry we didn't have more time. For one last example. One of the things we know about God, again, the letter Aleph. Is that we say in the Torah that God is the equivalent, the ultimate in truth. Adonai Eloheichem Emet. Or as we say in Ashkenazic Hebrew, Emes. The word truth, just please just give me your undivided attention so we can just do this in 5 minutes. The word Emes, truth, is an amazing word. First of all, if we take the numerical value, Aleph is 1, Mem is 40, Tuf is 400. Yep. If we reduce it, we get 441, which is equal to 9. 9 is an amazing number, because 9 times any number will ultimately equal 9. 9 times 1 is 9, 9 times 2 is 18, 1 and 8 is 9. 9 times 3 is 27, 2 and 7 is 9. 9 times 4 is 36, 3 plus 6 is 9. 9 times 5 is 45, 4 and 5 is 9. You always come back to the 9. 9 is the number of truth. The Talmud tells us that emet, truth, yesh raglayim medavar, it has legs to stand on. In English we have the same expression. If it's not true, it doesn't have a leg to stand on. In Hebrew, truth has legs. Every letter of the word emet, truth, if you write this properly, stands on 2 legs. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. The letters in the Hebrew word emet go from the first letter of the alphabet, the last letter, and the middle letter. When it's true from the beginning to the end, all the way through. If you take away the aleph from emet, you're left with death. Met. In the same way, if you took away the aleph from the word adam, you're left with blood. And blood is 44, met is 440. The opposite of truth is falsehood. Sheker. The word sheker. And the rabbis tell us that sheker, ein raglayim ledavar, doesn't have a leg to stand on. Each letter of sheker stands on one point. And as opposed to the word emes, where it's the first letter, the middle letter, and the last letter, shin, kuf, resh are basically the second to the last, third to the last, fourth to the last letter in the alphabet. They all need to stand together to hold themselves up because they don't have a leg to stand on.
Jews for Judaism hopes that you have found this audio recording to be helpful and informative. Jews for Judaism is an international organization dedicated to countering the multi-million dollar efforts of Christian missionary groups that target Jews, the impact of destructive cults and Eastern religions, and the growing rate of intermarriage that is devastating the Jewish community. Jews for Judaism achieves its goals through one-on-one counseling services and educational programs and materials that connect Jewish people to the spiritual depth, beauty, and wisdom of Judaism. Please contact Jews for Judaism if we can help you. www.jewsforjudaism.ca. Keeping Jews Jewish.